This is the Growth and Greatness e-commerce podcast, powered by Right Hook Digital, with your hosts, Scott Seward and Raymond Johnston. If you're an e-commerce brand founder, entrepreneur, or marketer looking to accelerate profitable growth for your business, then listen in, because this is the podcast for you.
Okay, we are back with the Growth and Greatness e-commerce podcast. Ray, good to see you again, man. How's things? What's happening? A lot happening in the e-com world.
It is. It's an exciting world. I think some of it we'll get into a little bit in this interview. But one thing I'm really excited about is I actually think that I'm seeing a lot of good trends in the industry where people and how they're thinking about the crazy volatility that we're seeing. Overall, I think on our team, a lot of us are keeping the right heads on our shoulders. And I think just across the industry, like I've actually seen now that looking back, I mean, we talked about iOS 14, like in episode one or two. And now looking back, I think like it's actually been okay. Has it been that bad? There's been some dips and a lot of volatility that people are seeing, but it's actually, everything's good, man. Like, I don't know how you're feeling, but I think everything's actually pretty fine.
I wouldn't say I'm feeling fine. Not bad. Like I think, you know, when we look at it from a performance standpoint across the board, it seems like a lot of the issue is with tracking and attribution.
Yeah,
you know,
without
performance,
doubt.
Like from an end result, you know, from an MER standpoint, looking ad spend versus to revenue, that's still functioning pretty well with a lot of brands. It's just really a lot of the reporting within platforms.
Yeah, it's and platform specific attribution, MER. For most of our brands, it's actually still at least pretty close to KPIs or still at the KPIs.
Yeah. But anyway, we're not going to talk about iOS 14 today. We are going to talk about something that I think is super important and relevant to both brands and agencies, and that is the challenge of finding really, really good e-commerce marketing talent. You're head deep in this at the moment, like where we're going through another burst where we're getting pretty close to 100 people. We're not far off. And I think we're going to
hit that. A couple months, I think we're going to hit that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like on the forecast. So that's, you know, 4 years and we'll be at a team of 100 globally. So that's, we've got this pretty dialed in now. We're getting there. There's still some challenges, but I think we've got a pretty good process, right? And it can be really hard to find the right people. We know the difficulty between Australia and the US particularly. Yep. So let's start there. Like let's talk about, you know, where there's very big differences in geolocation, right? So, and you've had to deal with this a lot. What do you see between Australia and the US?
Yeah, that's a great question. And part of it, I think, is population size. Obviously, let's just, you know, call it what it is. You know, the US has a bigger population than Australia. So I'm sure that, without a doubt, is a factor. I think also just where tech is situated too, that is also a factor.
Yeah, but we're a bit slow here.
Well, you guys' internet's progressing slowly but surely, so maybe that is a factor right there.
We just got dial-up.
We could probably have a 30-minute rant just on the Australian internet. But on the U.S. side, it's so there's a couple things. On the U.S. side, it is easier to hire and to find people than it is on the Australian side. One thing also I want to bring in is like you've maybe seen the articles where because of the post-COVID environment that we're in, a lot of people got so used to one, working remotely, and two, the fact that it kind of made them wake up and they want to choose areas or careers that actually excites them. And I've been seeing articles all over the place where a survey that said like 40% of people are considering leaving their workplace. But in addition to that, companies are trying to ramp up because they're coming back into office, they're ramping up production again, and there's a massive shortage of talent everywhere, airlines, warehouses, everywhere there's shortage. And so one thing we're finding is that I actually think that one of the reasons why it's hard in Australia, for example, to find talent is that they have so many choices. Like there's so much demand for it that a person that can like be nonchalant about like, maybe you're a little attractive, but I kind of want to taste this other thing over here.
Yeah, it's it is. Australia is just an interesting dynamic. And I think you're right. The talent pool is definitely a lot smaller. We don't have as many major centers. You know, a lot of the talent is in Sydney and Melbourne, just because that's where the biggest congregation of population and I guess corporate activity is as well. So you've got to be a little bit more flexible in Australia, I think, with looking to hire remote. You know, I'm in Adelaide and there's very few people here to find to
we
bring in house.
We reached out to all of your talent, Adelaide.
I'm pretty sure we've spoken to every person in Adelaide and Brisbane. You know, our preference is to have people in house, but sometimes that's just not an option if you want to have the right person. And for us, let's start there, because it really starts with making sure that you've got the right person and not just settling. And we've tried recruitment agencies and been fired.
Yeah, we made, I mean, gosh, 100 people, we made a lot of mistakes, which is how you learn as well, from recruiters to hiring the wrong talent. And I think, thankfully, like our thesis really changed, was probably like 2 years ago now, right? That's when like our thesis around it really changed. And
big pivot.
Yeah, I remember it was you and Dee that led that. It was after you guys were going through different books and just came to the conclusion like how important like us almost looking at our roster and is everyone on this team someone that one we would hire again, knowing what we know now about these people, and then secondly, do we actually think that they're the right fit for us? And I remember like 2 years ago, like we kind of cleaned house, like almost got a whole new team, a new roster. UND led that charge. And I remember the first few people on those interviews, and you can jump in here, like what a massive change that made instantly.
Man, that was probably a big turning point in a shift in our culture in the company. It was massive. And I remember, I think it would have been like the first 6 months of 2019. And I would say that was probably our toughest period as an agency. And it was really when we were going from that 20 people to 40 people size. It was just an interesting transition. You got so many more communication points. You've got to restructure things. A lot of the roles within the company changed from what they originally were. And let's talk about media buyers specifically. So when we started, we had media buyers. They were more in the background. We had an account manager that dealt with the front facing. And then we realized it was more discussions between you and I going, how can we find more people like you and I who can handle relationships really well and are also really good marketers? And we were almost a bit arrogant at the time, thinking that we were unicorns or something like that, until we actually put it down on paper. And that was really the starting point, right? Us getting clear on who we were going after. And we build out our seat scorecards. Okay, so what does this person need to look like culturally? What are the core soft skills that they need to have from a relationship standpoint, a personality standpoint, and in alignment and, you know, in conjunction with their abilities as a Facebook media buyer and an e-commerce marketer? They've got to have broad knowledge, but almost a bit T-shaped. I would say, you know, I was reading a book on, you know, being a polymath recently, and not so much being T-shaped, but pie-shaped. Or a comb shape. You know, you got to have a.
Yeah, they're like a generalist in some areas. They have to be a generalist is what we're looking for. Or like good. Our thesis was they have to be really good at client relationships, the front facing, which is a lot of times why we say relationship first and then ROAS, or relationship over ROAS. And the second part is their strategic mind when it comes to the creative and the angles. And that was like 2 years ago when Facebook was still very tactical, but we identified that was such an important shift that the industry was moving towards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when we got clear on that, and then I sat down and started writing the job description, I think that was really the turning point, because it started attracting a different type of person, right? And you know, we brought in what, four or five, six people with that that hiring spree we went on at the end of 2019. And I think we've still got the bulk of those people, and they really built the nucleus of what the team has been built from now, and attracted more of those people. And that was really the starting point and the shifting point, I think, in the cultural change within the company. It's been, you know, just a massive improvement since then.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And one thing to add to that is the dividends of what that's done. Those people went on to train other people, and then those people went on to train other people, and then those same people had influence in other areas. And so that's why, like, talent, I mean, who you bring in, it's not only going to be like the core backbone, the nervous system of your success, but all the different areas that they're going to touch and they're going to influence. It's incredible to see, but also we've seen the opposite side where we have the wrong person or bring the wrong person in, and it's like a poison. So advice, absolutely, get rid of those people as soon as possible if you identify that.
Yeah, and the other thing you really realize quickly is when you have the wrong people, you're feeling that you need to build rigid systems and processes to allow for the wrong people to get them to do what they're meant to do.
We were doing that. We were like changing, we were changing structures and like trying to give like certain people just specific industries. And like, we were doing all this crazy stuff. And then you guys woke up, you're like, wait a second, like we're going overboard. This is a people problem, not a process problem.
Yeah. And then once we got the right people, you don't feel like you need these rigid systems. You know, like all of our team pods now, our strategists have their own little teams, like their mini agency within the agency. And okay, the objective is the same, but they've all got slightly different ways in the way they operate. And I think it was really probably that there's a really good video from the Spotify CEO that breaks down how they operate internally in their tech environment. And is it
guilds? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, like they've got guilds and things, but it was more like within their little teams, right? So you've got their objective is aligned with the business objective. And then you've got parameters from within they can work, but the team can figure out how they want to execute themselves, because everyone's got different ways of working, right? Like some people might like sprints, some people might like to be a little bit more free flowing and less structured and whatnot. And you know, every team's got its own DNA, and I think giving them that autonomy is motivating for them and themselves, and allows them to work in a way that they're them and the team figures out that works best for them. But you know, when you don't have the right people who just aren't executing, that's when you feel like you've got to have these strict, rigid processes and things in place and to make up for it.
And having talked to so many people on interviews in the hiring process, it's like that's a reoccurring theme a lot of them say is either one, that the process was so stifling, there wasn't that availability for a person to, you know, stray away from it or to be a little different, put their own spice and flavor on it, or on the flip side was just in the structure, it didn't even allow for that availability to begin with. And so I think, just to echo what you said, that if you find yourself having to overcompensate with systems, it may just look in the mirror. Is it a people problem? Because I've seen it so many times with us, is that you get a high performer in, is you'd be amazed at how little structure you need. I'm not saying you don't need structure. We're a very structured agency, very structured, but you'd be amazed at how much freer, because performers always perform. At the end of the day, you get a performer, they're always going to perform. You don't have to worry about them. Don't have to check up on them. Don't have to micromanage. They just perform because that's the kind of person that they are. And so, yeah, that's the number one goal we have, is find those high performers and bring them in.
Totally. So let's start with, I think, something that's usually a bit overlooked, and we did in the early stages as well. I'd say this is probably more specific to agencies than e-commerce brands, just in the way that they're structured. So our marketing team, we are just as focused now on marketing towards talent as we are for clients. And you have to be, and that has to be an ongoing thing. It is just as important, because at the end of the day, the service that we deliver is based on the people that we hire. And if you want to have the best people, then you've got to attract them, right? So let's start there. Like we've made some changes in the last few months in terms of what we've been putting out and content, and how we're, you know, speaking to talent in terms of copy. What have we done? What are a few of the things that we've done in the last few months to change our marketing in that area?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing is quiet voices don't get fed. And I think a mistake, so please everyone listen and learn from our mistake, was that we were kind of had this perception, at least I did, being transparent, was that if you build it, they will come. Well, not necessarily. Like in the world we live in, like, come on, like you've got to be somewhere. You've got to find a way to attract the talent. And we have methods of doing that now. And so when we started really making this shift was we said, okay, what we did is we talked to all of our high performers in the team. Okay, what is it that you love about here? What is it about our culture? What is it about how we're structured? What is it about like your opportunities? So that was the first starting point. And that gave us amazing feedback. Then we said, okay, like how can we just, we're not going salesy work here. How can we just tell our story? Why they're successful? Honestly, and have our own employee success stories, like tell their story, let people see their success in the environment that they're in and how we care about their success. And so what we did was we started just filming testimonials, reviews of our own employees, like actually just doing interviews of them. So that's one way. Another way is building a landing page. Another way is really changing how we promote what's different about us. And I remember it was actually through talking to those high performers in our team where I really started to formulate, okay, who are the people we're trying to attract? That just like marketing, like, and this is one of the things I'd recommend is you've got to approach your own hiring like you would a brand, or if you owned a brand or you work for a brand with your own funnel, you've got to. So who are the people that are going to be successful here? You have to identify that, be really crystal clear. And then what are the pains that they're feeling? And so I honestly think the last 6 months, like, we've got that down pretty perfect. Like, we know exactly who we're trying to attract. We know exactly the pains that they're feeling right now and how we're different with our culture and our structure, how we're going to solve that pain. In addition, the opportunities and the growth they want to have, we know exactly how we're going to do that as well. So I think that's without a doubt the first starting point, and then craft your messaging, your applications, how you market and advertise the application. Even if you do work with recruiters, how you also make sure they know how to communicate that, because that is without a doubt the first starting point.
Yeah, I agree. That's huge. Like, so for every role we have in the agency, we've got a seat scorecard, right? So what are a few of the things that we put in that seat scorecard to help us identify who we're going after?
First one is their native genius. So I think for us, our strategist is, the first one is to be a problem solver and be a natural rapport builder. Because at the end of the day, with what we do, marketing changes all the time. If you don't have that native genius where you can solve problems or complex problems or look at things in an analytical way, you're not going to survive here. So you have to be native, a problem solver, and be innately curious to solve problems. And the last thing is, like I said, the natural rapport builder. Like, it's everything is what we do. That's why brands come back. Because, man, like, I just don't have as good of a relationship with my other agency or my other freelancer as I did with you guys.
Absolutely. And then it was a few of the, I think that a lot of those interviews was really what drove changes in our job copy, right? We learned a lot around why the guys that are here and love it here,
like, why they stay.
That's it. You know, and what they really value. And also interesting hearing how they came across us and things. So I think it's the same as anything, right? Customer research, like, if you want the answers to these things, you've got that direct source. And I think that's something that's really underutilized, both with brands talking to customers, but I think also in businesses talking to their employees and trying to bring more of the right people in. So that's a critical thing.
How you know if you figure it out is when you're talking to someone, and this has happened to me several times in the last 6 months. You're talking to them, whether that's an interview or even as a real customer, and they say, I read this and I felt like you were literally talking to me. Like, and that's when you're like, okay, we've got it. And yeah. I'd say my recommendation is, if people are listening to this, is if until you get to that point, you haven't gone far enough or deep enough. Like, you have to get to that point.
No, you just sound like every other job ad out there. Like, you go to a job site and you read through 90% of them. They all sound the same.
Oh, it's boring as crap.
Yeah. There's nothing about the brand or the business that's actually coming through. Their core values. Are their core values of things that are just written on the wall? Or are they something that are lived and actually permeate the company? There's a big difference there. So I think, you know, if you don't have that there, that does make it difficult. And I'd say that's probably the place to start, is ensuring that you've got a really strong culture. But yeah, that's really what's going to come through in everything in your marketing and bring the right people in, and clients on both sides. So once we've got that, right, so that seat scorecard, that's also used throughout the hiring process and throughout the interviews. But let's start looking at what this looks like in terms of a funnel, because this really is a funnel. It's the same as a customer funnel, right? So what does this funnel look like? What's happening at the top? Where are we finding talent? That's probably the place to start. And then what does it look like as we progress down there?
Yeah, great question. So a couple of things is, when you're starting this, and for us, because we've hired so many people over the years, is be innately curious like a marketer. Like, I tasted every hiring platform out there. There are some I adamantly cannot stand, and there's some that have brought fruit to us. Cool. Then you find those, just like any traffic channel. Okay, I'm going to dive deeper. I'm going to keep testing. So over the years, the main tool that work for us right now still is Indeed, LinkedIn, and freelance recruiters and direct outreach. Like, those are the top four that work best for us. I've tested every other thing. I can tell you the pros and cons of both, which we're not going to go into, but those are the biggest ones. So top of funnel, I would say if we think about like budget allocation and our time allocation of what we really focus on as we do this, we mainly focus on LinkedIn direct outreach and Indeed. And then what we do is, then the other percentage of the times we have a freelance recruiters working for us on the scene. So it's great, because they're not an agency, which I'm adamantly against recruiting agencies for a lot of reasons. Is one is they tie into exclusivity contracts. Two is they don't work as fast for you. And so I think that was our biggest problem, is that for a long time, we didn't have good enough control to where if we need to turn on the switch, because we need to do a sprint on hiring, we couldn't do it. And we've actually gotten that point to where we can do that now. And so top of funnel, it's all those things. Okay.
I'll just add to that as well, because on my side, on the marketing team, we also run, I guess, almost like brand awareness video ads for talent,
right.
targeting talent as well. So we're always trying to build that awareness and highlighting our team members, talking about what it's like to work at Right Hook, what they love about it, the clients that we get to work with, and the culture. So that's something that we do sort of alongside this to help build that brand awareness for us as an agency as well.
That's correct. And it's actually worked very well, where we've had people come to us and say, hey, I saw that video that you guys ran. And so it works really well. And then the other thing, to piggyback off what you said, is activate your team to help with this too. So if you think about the funnel, like the bigger the top of your funnel is, the more potential people that can come in, and there's filtering processes through there. So also activate your team, where we have our team, they will post as well on their own organic channels. In addition to that, which is like a little sneak peek, as part of the hiring process, when someone comes in here now into Right Hook, part of their onboarding is they have to post on LinkedIn that they just got started this new job at Right Hook, how excited they are, what they're learning. It's all part of the funnel. Now their friends are seeing it and their connections are seeing it. So it's part of that funnel. So that's activate the team that you do have.
I actually didn't know that bit was in there.
You've been noticing it, haven't you?
Yeah, I get tagged in a little, so I always see that.
I tell them, I was like, tag Scott, tag Ray, and say these things.
I like that. It's like an auto-influencer campaign. That's perfect. I like that.
Continuing on the funnel is just like when you run your own ads in your own funnel, like track the different phases. So track which platform is actually giving you the most first interested applicants, which one is actually giving you the best quality. That's important. Like, you've got to track which one's giving you the best quality. A lot of platforms are going to give you an insane amount of applications, but then there's no quality there. So you have to track that. So we track initial applications, quality of those, and there's even additional DNQs. So middle funnel is actually what I would consider is our DNQ process. So top of funnel gives me applications as we can. And middle funnel is actually our DNQ process. That's the application, the copy. People are going to self-diagnose for themselves whether they're a fit for this culture or not. And that's on purpose. We don't want everyone. Okay, so that's one filter. The second filter is the questions we ask them in the interviews. I'm sorry, in the application process. That's another filter. Because what you want to get to, especially if you feel like you're wasting so much time interviewing people who aren't good fits, is because you're not doing a good enough job filtering them. And so you only want to hop on a call with someone that you're confident is actually a potentially good fit, either skill-wise or culturally, and then you'll keep filtering through there in your interview process. And then bottom of funnel is strictly our skills assessments and obviously our interviews. So by the time we hop on a call with someone to interview, they've gone through application and they self-diagnose that they're a good fit. They've taken a light skills assessment to make sure they actually know what they're talking about. They have to also submit a video introduction and or reasons why they think that they are a good fit at Right Hook. And then if they do those things and they pass those things, which we have scorecards and we grade even those things, and they pass those things, then they hop on an interview. And by that point, most of the time, we're not hopping on with people and, hate to say, but like wasting our time, and they have no experience, or they're just like people that they're hoping for like the lucky break, but they've never run ads before. By that time, like, it's actually quality people. So that's kind of like our funnel right now in a nutshell.
And I think there's a few things in there that feedback we've had as we do a little bit backwards. And so let's go back to once someone puts in an application, right? Because the first part of that application, we get people to go through a questionnaire. So when we've spoken to recruiters, they've actually pushed back on that a little bit to try and get us to do that after the interview. But from our standpoint, we're trying to be as time effective as possible. We don't want to be talking to people which we can tell from answers to a few questions, whether they've even in the ballpark of having the skill set that we need, right? So we put that questionnaire there as first filter, because we can open that and in 60 seconds know, does this person know what they're talking about in terms of technical, let's just Absolutely. Say Facebook specific. And we always got pushback for that, but there was a specific reason for that. And that's proven very effective for us. And again, you're talking about the filters, you know, and having, there's two parts to it. So let's look at the video. Two reasons for that for us. One, we want to see that people can actually follow directions if they're stepped out. If they can't follow a simple direction in how serious they are.
Like, if you're not Absolutely. Serious, you're not going to do it.
Absolutely. And another part, given that we are 95% remote this is a very front-facing role. And again, I'm talking about a specific role as an example here. It's important that, you know, you're presentable on video and can speak on video. So that's another filter for us to be able to go, oh, okay, this person, you know, speaks well, communicates well, and can follow directions. So there's multiple filters in there for various reasons. And that then leads us to, great, this person looks on paper like they potentially could be a really good fit. Let's spend the time to get to know them a little bit better through the hiring process, through the interview process. So let's get into the interview process. What does this look like?
That's a great question. So for the role of strategist, which is what I'm primarily involved in, so that's email strategist, Google PPC, paid social and or influencer is, I believe in hiring tough to manage easy. A lot of people say that, but that's my personal belief because, again, the goal is to get high performers. So our interview process, we have three interviews. Okay, interview number one is for cultural fit and light skills assessment. So what we do is for the interview process, we call our our interview sheet. And it's almost like we hand off the baton and we have a different person on the company that does each interview. And the end goal is like they have certain questions that they ask, they take notes, but they also score that person based off of their responses. So, and then there's a score at the end of each interview, and then that baton gets passed on to the next person if that person passes that first interview, for example, and the second and third, so forth. So that's three steps. The first interview, light skills assessment verbally, just to get their background, and also like cultural fit, but more like role fit. Interview number one is, are they a fit for the role, whether that's client-facing, process management, leadership, all those different things that take up a good strategist, okay? Then if they pass that first interview, which is scored, then that baton is then handed off to the next person. And what we do is we give them access to an ad account, and we give them either an audit and a light strategy. We want to see like their creative mind with angles or what they would do if this was their account, for example, which we can go into details there later on. And so we have them do that. We just have them sign an NDA. We give them an account access. We give them a time frame to complete that. And then once they do, they hop on the second interview. And I want to stop right there because some people don't believe in skills assessments. I think that is completely wrong whatsoever. You have to do that. One, it's commonplace, I believe, but a lot of not only agencies, other companies says companies and even like high level, like suit executives say that's just the wrong thing to do. I completely disagree. You've got to do skills assessments because you want to make sure like, yeah, because you're investing in this person, you know, you're also going to provide for them and their family as well. So they do that. We had a second interview. In the second interview, that's where it's done by someone else or two people. And honestly, that person, we let that person lead the meeting. So we're assessing one, their strategic mind, their actual skill set, what they would do if they're running that ad account. We're also assessing, can they have a conversation? Can they walk us through it? Because if they can't walk us through it, they're sure as heck not going to walk a client through it. And that's like such a critical function in the role that we're really, really strict on that. Okay. Then if that passes based off of, we think it's a good fit, we think the person actually knows what they're doing and they can actually be a high performer in our company, then that baton gets handed off for the third interview, which is typically with me, where then I do a deeper cultural fit assessment. Any flags that the first two interviewers flagged gets passed on to me for me to address in that call. So that's our process. Three interviews. It typically takes a week and a half or 2 weeks from the time we have first interview.
Yeah, it's not a quick process. And I don't think it can't be if you want to find the right people. And look, you know, it's gotten to the point at times where it's taken us 6 months plus to find the right person for a specific role, hasn't it? You know, we've, and I think this was, again, if we go back and look at our first 2 years to our second 2 years as an agency where there was that shift, you know, you're so desperate to get someone in so you can grow the business. I think the shift was, if we can't find the right person, then we will wait. That was the big shift. And we've done that several times, right?
And you have to. I've made this mistake where a body is not just a body. And what I mean by that is you have an open seat. You need this row filled. Just throwing a body in there, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be an epic failure. Like, you've got to do your due diligence.
And you're paying for more problems down the road that you're going to have to deal with.
Every person that I made the mistake bringing in, and in the early days when it was too fast, it's cost us way more money down the road every single time. Like, you're going to save so much more money. You're going to make more money, but just if you have to wait to find the right role, it's better to be confident than to bring someone in that you're not confident in.
Yeah, and I think another thing that I'll add to that, and from a couple of mistakes that I made in the marketing department, is not having the resources and infrastructure in place for someone to come in to do their job effectively. I tried to hire too early with a couple of roles, fixed that, and now things are really, really good, but had that same experience. So let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, as much as it is important having the process to get the right people coming in and that funnel and that process, exactly the same as a customer experience, right? Building brand, building retention, that first couple of months, especially when someone's being onboarded and indoctrinated with the company and getting, you know, immersing themselves in how you operate and how you run as an operation. Let's look at that. Like, what does our onboarding process, how has that shifted and been upgraded and improved, and how important that is really to the experience? Because it has to be a wow experience. It's got to match what they were sold with right on the front.
It is. And I actually think this is probably the hardest thing that any company has to solve, in my opinion, because a person only has one first experience with your company. And that first experience, it's going to be a reoccurring thread or theme throughout their entire career at your company. Maybe if it's a really bad experience, maybe you can overcome it, but it's going to be like, it's there, it's ingrained in them. It's like, it's critical. And in the early days, I sprinted, just made a crap ton of videos, and I thought that was great. But the problem is, people went through it and they felt, they was like, dude, like, I feel like I just watched like 40 hours of videos and I didn't retain anything. I'm like, well, maybe that's not the best way to do it. And so, like, you know, now we're on version 3, and what we're doing right now is it's a mix of, you know, some formal training. Cause at the end of the day, to teach someone how to do something, there's only so many ways you can teach it. And you have to, and you can't teach up, you know, 5 people at once the same thing unless they're all on a call. So we have some formal training, but we also do a lot of mentoring where we pair new hires with people who are already successful in their role, and they work on specific projects with that team in that pod at certain times as they're also going through other training on how we do things, like how we run accounts, how we do creative, also how we do our CASM process of how we audit your business to make sure that you are, you know, ready to scale. So there's these steps where it's mentoring, but also think of it as just like our hiring process. In every funnel, like, gosh, even their onboarding is a funnel, we have milestones that we grade and assess them. Because once you identify the core milestones, you have to make sure that they, I'm going to use the term pass, like, so it's almost like you're back in school. They have to pass those milestones, otherwise you don't have the confidence of when they're actually boots on the ground. So we assess those milestones, and then if a milestone is flagged that it wasn't a pass, well then cool. Now you know where the gaps are, because you don't want to hire someone and you're like, these people are failing, but I have no idea what their gaps are. Like, you want to know going into the role what their gaps are, so you can have some intentionality behind of helping fill or train those gaps, for example. So we have those milestones, and it's all leading up to them being strategy fundamentals ready, to being team ready, to being client ready, to being actually operationally ready.
It is such a balancing act, right? Because everyone that comes in is different. They're all going to have slightly different areas where they need to level up.
It's dynamic. But it's not constant at all.
And we're trying to find that balance between giving them the important core information that they need, the training that they need, but also getting them operationally ready and revenue driving as soon as we can without it being at the detriment of quality or anything like that. So it's really a delicate balancing act that's, you know, and we're always trying to improve the L&D side of what we're doing internally. It's the most important part, right?
Like, it is. And which is why you have to, when someone comes in, this is what we do right now is for example, if they're a senior or they're a mid-level, or maybe they're a little bit greener, but they have qualities that give us confidence in their performance here, is when they first come on board, like, we do take stock of what we think those strengths and weaknesses are, so that we're already aware of them, but we can also slightly pivot their experience. For example, like, we just hired a senior strategist, and she's a senior. She's been running accounts for e-com for a long time. She knows what she's doing. She knows what she's doing in creative angles, running the brands. we don't need to beat that dead horse. She already has it. We just have to say, here's how we do things. Here's a few suggestions that's going to make you successful. Let's move her on to the area that is different that she does have to learn herself up. So like, that's where her, we can shorten that experience and have it a little bit more tailored to her, where someone who's coming in here and they're a little bit rougher on the edges, and we kind of need to soften it around a little bit. You know, we may prolong that experience just to make sure that we're helping them to be really strong fundamentally.
This area here is, I think, probably the most challenging part for brands as well, especially if it's the first time they've hired. Like, so for example, for us, you know, we've been through this process with 30, 40, 50 people in a specific role. So we've been able to have a lot of at-bats, improve it, streamline it, get it better, iterate. For brands trying to bring someone in, let's pivot here and talk a little bit about brands, because you know we often grow brands to the point where the founder needs to have a marketing manager.
It becomes an obstacle to their growth.
Because they've got to deal with us, and or if there's other agencies or other, you know, freelancers or whatever involved, it's too many contact points. So a lot of the time they need to bring in either someone in-house for whatever function, but if it's a marketing manager role to become that person that liaises with us and manages the relationship with us, they've not had that person in place before. They don't know exactly what they need, how to hire them, how to find them. What would your recommendations be to brands looking to fill that marketing manager role, find that generalist that can come in and really help support them as a founder? It's a tricky one.
It is, because we've seen so many times where the e-com brand, they're in a pinch, they want to keep growing. So the first thing is, don't bring the wrong person in just because you want to grow. Like, if you have to scale back a little bit so that you can take the time to find that right person and then continue to scale up when you have that right person, that's what you want to do. Because like, when you have the right person, you're going to scale to the moon. But if you don't have the right person, you're going to blow up your business or potentially. So we've seen it so many times where a brand, they were too fast on the trigger and didn't do their due diligence. Hired that person, they didn't work. Within 2 weeks, everyone knew that wasn't going to work out. They dragged it out for 3 months. And then like, it was an absolute fiasco and their business suffered because the founder had to fire them, look for someone else. It was a problem. So the first thing is, just take stock of that. Second thing is, you got to be really clear of what you want that person to do. So like, write down, okay, here's everything I'm doing. Here's the stuff I hate, or I know I can't do anymore because I need to focus on these things. Boom. That's the first start of your job description. Now write something around that. And then the third thing is you set really clear expectations. So you mentioned something, Scott, on like, for example, our onboarding experience. But what I'm going to tell you here also relates to an e-com brand when they're hiring. And that is, listen, no one's perfect. No onboarding process may be perfect, but you can have their experience be better by setting really good expectations. So for example, like when we were hiring for a new department, when I was in the hiring, the e-com brand should do the same, saying, listen, this is a brand new role. Where we want to go, let me set really clear expectations of what you can expect. Not, we don't have training, or we have very light training. Here's what the department is next. I want you to know what you're getting into, but if you want to go on a journey and create something amazing, this is why you should come here. But let me tell you what we're going to have to do along the way. So for an e-com brand, set those expectations. So you're hiring a marketing manager saying, listen, this is what we need. Here's where I want to go. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, there's not formal training here. You're going to have to be the kind of person that just can figure stuff out for yourself, or be innately curious and test, or be that kind of native genius. Because if you set that expectation, then when they come in here, they're not getting something they don't expect. They've already expected it. And what I'll find is those people actually perform better, because it's like, oh, cool, this is what I expected, rather than coming in and like kind of like twiddling their thumbs, waiting for you to teach them and tell them everything.
Yeah. And I think it's bringing someone into a role right like that, where you need them to help you build the infrastructure, is a very different person.
You've got to test for that. Like, you've got to interview for that. If they don't have experience doing it, let's just be honest. I know when you're on the other side and you don't have experience, you want someone just to give you a break. Come on, like, just let me prove myself. There's a time and a place for that. Not when it's at a critical juncture where you're hiring your first person or second person to help you grow. You need someone that has that experience. And listen, let's call it for what it is. It pays to get the right talent. It's
damn right.
It's so worth it.
Yeah. If you And we know at various salary levels, you know, there's a big difference in the quality of people. Like, you're massive. Not going, you're absolutely not going massive. To get someone who is exceptionally good at their role for 30-40% less than what they can get elsewhere just because they like your brand. Whether they like your brand at the end of the day, like, they've still got self-interest, they've still got families to support, they've still got, you know, their own personal goals financially, and people know what they're worth. So you really do have to pay for it. And again, if you try to skim and go at the lower end, it's going to cost you down the road. And if you take that little bit of a hit and get the right person and pay a little bit more, our experience is that pays off in dividends down the road. It compounds, massive. Right? It's the same as compounding.
One thing I want to add real quick is, so yes, a key function like a marketing manager or person to head up your logistics or your operations, that is such a critical function. You don't want to skip hire the right person. When you're going through this process, if you're like a one-person show or a two-person show, you got to take the time to think through all these things. You may find that some of these roles, you don't have to hire a top dollar person. You could hire an assistant or a VA to do some of those. I know we do that a lot. Our brands do that a lot, but be really clear, what are the core areas I need for growth or the care areas that it's just tasks that someone can do and they don't have to be that high level talent.
Agree. I think that's a pretty good place to leave it. I think we've gone into a lot of depth here. One thing I will say is, look, if there's anyone out there looking for work, we're always hiring good talent. We're always looking for it. And if you're actually interested on being client side, we've got clients that are actively searching in Australia and the US, particularly in the fashion space, male and female, that are looking for really solid marketing managers. So if that's of interest to you, feel free to reach out as well, and we might be able to link you up, because we do have people that we know that are looking and asking us for assistance with it. So we're always willing to help where we can. Ray, awesome chat, man. I think this is something that's not talked about enough, and it is really, I mean, we know people are the core of your business, right?
I have brands tell me all the time that this is the area they're struggling in for growth.
The most, yeah. It's usually the financial side or the people side. You know, if they've got a good brand, if they've got a good product, you know, you can get your marketing right and everything around that, but building a team and managing your finances and your capital, I think, are probably the two areas that we see that the businesses struggle with the most. So I hope this has been immensely valuable. If you've got any additional questions, feel free to reach out to us in the Facebook group at Growth and Greatness E-commerce. Or you can email Ray or I directly, and more than happy to answer any questions. Ray, appreciate it, man. Some amazing insights there. Great chat, dude.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next episode. Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Growth and Greatness E-commerce podcast. I hope you got a ton of value out of this episode. And if you did, we'd love for you to leave us a review on your platform of choice and help us reach as many people as we can. Now, if you're a brand founder, an e-commerce entrepreneur, or an in-house marketing manager looking to accelerate your growth this year, then reach out to us at Right Hook Digital. We're a performance branding agency, and we specialize in partnering with e-commerce brands to help them hit their growth goals with maximum ROI. Now, if this sounds like a solution that you need, then check us out at righthookdigital.com and schedule a call with our client partnerships team. They'd love to have a chat with you and see how we can help you grow in 2021.